Nayroli Price moved to Seattle from Cape Town, South Africa last year. The two cities have a lot in common. They're both surrounded by sea and mountains, and you can speak English in both of them. But as Nayroli found out, there is one major difference that she wasn't expecting.
When I boarded the bus on Saturday the 19th of January, I noticed that something was different. People weren't glued to their phones. They were talking excitedly to each other while adjusting their pink hats and comparing handmade signs. I was on my way to the 3rd National Women's March in Seattle. And as I took my seat, I thought about what lay ahead of me. The first march of its kind was in 2017, and it was the biggest single day demonstration in US history. All over the world, people marched in solidarity, even in my hometown at the tip of the African continent. But that was then. Today, as I got off the bus, I had nervous butterflies in my stomach. As an outsider, was it my place to join this protest at all? And what about the police? How would they react? But my trepidation began to subside as I joined the crowds at Carl Anderson Park. Everywhere I looked, there were babies in strollers and dogs on leashes. It felt like a family picnic. And even though this was my first time protesting in Seattle, being part of the Women's March felt familiar. And that's because I recently moved here from the protest capital of the world, South Africa. Our democracy is just 25 years old. Before 1994, South Africa was ruled by a white minority government that instituted the policy of apartheid. The word literally means separateness. Racism was the law. Taking to the streets became the only way for black South Africans to be seen and heard. For South Africans, protesting is an intergenerational legacy. Even for me, a privileged white woman. And that's because my parents were active in the struggle against apartheid. In fact, their activism led them both to Europe and each other. They met there in 1987. My father had faced prison time for refusing to serve in the apartheid military and had fled into exile. And my mother had been harassed by the police for dating across the racial divide, an offense that could land you in jail. They returned with me as a baby in 1991, only after Nelson Mandela had been released and it was safe to return home.
I, Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela, do hereby swear to be faithful to the Republic of South Africa.
My parents took me to my first protest when I was just 2 years old. Since then, I have marched many times. And often, they're the ones giving me advice about surviving the tear gas. Despite the promises of our new democratically elected government, many people still don't have access to basic services like housing or running water. And in response to these and other failures by those in power, there have been as many as 3 protests per day in recent years. But it's not just the numbers that make South Africa the protest capital of the world. It's also the way that we make ourselves heard. We have a very distinct protest style. It's called the toy toy. And it's kind of a rhythmic march, accompanied by singing, whistling, clapping, and chanting. The sound that you're hearing comes from the documentary Amandla, A Revolution in Four-Part Harmony. The toy toy is best described as a war dance of sorts. The movement of lifting your legs high in the air keeps the blood pumping and your energy high. The synchronized movement is also unifying and connects you to your fellow protesters. To outsiders, South African protest can feel militaristic. Fellow protesters are called comrades or cadres, and the crowd is disciplined by a call and response. A shout of power in isiXhosa is responded to with, "To the people!"
Manda! Manda!
This is so different to what I experienced in Seattle. The Women's March felt like a celebration, a place for friends to catch up, grab coffee, and take selfies. It was a moment to be proud of, but it didn't feel desperate or threatening. In South Africa, you will know that the police are typically armed to the teeth in riot gear. They ride around in these imposing tank-like structures nicknamed hippos and caspers, and they often use violence in the form of stun grenades, tear gas, water cannons, and rubber bullets to break up a march. But on that cold, grey Seattle morning at the Women's March, that felt like a world away. Here, police were pedaling alongside us on bicycles. They were at the back of the crowd, acting as sweepers and chatting casually to the protesters. In this predominantly white privileged space, I felt safe and protected by the police. There was no confrontation, no tension, no violence, and no sense of urgency. It felt more like a parade than a protest. Later on the bus ride home, I felt satisfied. It had been a fun event. It felt like a safe and inclusive space, and seeing the families at the march had warmed my heart. But something had been missing. And in that moment, I realized that what I had grown up with, what had always felt natural to me, was so specific to a time and a place. That's the definition of home. It's the very first template that you have. The one that you see the world through. The one you don't even know is there until it's gone.
I may be walking in the streets of a city called London, but the dust on my boots and the rhythm of my feet and my heartbeat say Africa. I may be walking in the streets of a city called Amsterdam, but the dust on my boots and the rhythm of my feet and my heart.